Now it's time to have a seat on Dr. Carol's couch. Here's your host, Dr. Carol Lieberman.
And welcome to today's edition of Dr. Carol's Couch. I'm your psychiatrist host, Dr. Carol Lieberman. Well, today we're going to be talking about Prince's death, and does his family have a wrongful death suit? Will they be able to sue for wrongful death, and against whom? I'm putting my expert witness forensic psychiatry hat on for today's show. And my guest is Jill Cohn. She is a founding partner of Cohn & Cohn. Before that, she was an assistant DA, and she has been a freelance reporter for the television show America's Most Wanted. She particularly handles personal injury and medical malpractice, so this is exactly her area of expertise. She was named one of Washington's top lawyers in the Washingtonian magazine. She's a graduate of the University of Miami School of Law. She was graduated cum laude. And she is admitted to the bar in three states, Columbia, District of Columbia, Maryland, and New York. So if you're having problems in any of those states, give her a call. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Thank you, Dr. Carol. I appreciate that. I appreciate that law firm plug, too. Who knew that was coming? Very nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, now, Prince died, actually, on April 21st, and why are we still talking about him in June? Because more and more information has been coming out, and in particular, information about the cause of death, which was from, well, so far has been ruled, an accidental overdose of fentanyl, which is an opioid, pain reliever. And there's questions about where he got these medications and why he was taking the medications. Was he a drug addict? Was it just for pain? And he just, went too far. Did he know what he was doing? Was it suicide? All these interesting questions. And particularly, although, Jill, you wouldn't think with all his millions that the family, other than, to get justice, you wouldn't think that they would necessarily be going after doctors for wrongful death. But if they're entitled to that, which I think they may well be, why not? Even if they donate the money to some charity.
Right.
So what are some of your thoughts about this?
Well, Dr. Carroll, you're 100% correct. Toxicology reports from the medical examiner's office did find out that Prince did die from an accidental opioid overdose from the drug fentanyl. What's interesting, and we're still talking about him for several reasons. One, we're still talking about him because he's Prince and his legacy is so long and so deep. And I think we'll be talking about Prince a long, long time after this, primarily because of who he was as an artist, but also because of what friends and family knew about his lifestyle. He was not considered an abuser of alcohol or drugs. He was a vegan. He lived very cleanly. He was religious. You know, he really wasn't one of these, as eccentric as he was. He was a clean liver. So this is very surprising to hear. But the toxicology report does not lie. I mean, he died of an accidental opioid overdose, so he was taking drugs. So the question is, why was he taking the drugs? How was he getting the drugs? Was a doctor prescribing them? So that's kind of what we look at as lawyers, and that is where the wrongful death case would come from. It would be a medical malpractice case. For example, if a doctor was treating him and was prescribing fentanyl and was not monitoring his intake of it or monitoring his bodily response to it and was departing from what we call the standard of care, acting negligently as a doctor, then the family would be entitled to file a wrongful death claim.
Yes,
and so, so what is interesting here is that we don't know anything. Unlike Michael Jackson, 2009, not so dissimilar. Unlike Michael Jackson, we knew about Michael's drug use. He had one doctor, Dr. Conrad Murray, who was prescribing, who was watching, who was monitoring, who was ultimately convicted involuntary manslaughter, the criminal case. And so that was a very direct relationship. Here, almost 2 months later, we really don't know how Prince got his drugs. Was there even a doctor involved? if there's not a doctor involved, there's not a medical malpractice case. If there's not a hospital or a doctor or a caregiver involved, there's not a medical malpractice case. You really can't sue a drug cartel for, you know, providing illegal drugs to anyone. So there would not be a case if there is no connection between the person prescribing the drug and how Prince was getting it.
Yes, well, fortunately for our discussion, in any case, there are a number of doctors who have been named as having something to do with him, although, you know, it's still been rather mysterious as far as what their role was. I mean, let's talk about some of them. Dr. Michael Todd.
I know you're probably referring. Yes, I know exactly to what you're referring.
Dr. Michael Todd Schulenberg. He was a doctor in Minnesota. He supposedly had, according to at least one report, he had two doctor visits with him a week before he was Prince was taken unconscious off a plane in an emergency stop. And then April 20th, the day before he died. And what's so interesting is, you know, one of the reports I heard on the radio was that Dr. Schulenberg used to work at North Memorial Medical Center while he was treating Prince, and then suddenly he disappeared from there. It's not been clear whether he was fired, whether he resigned, whether he, you know, went to Mexico. What do you know about Dr. Schulenberg?
Well, I would say, Dr. Carroll, I share your concern about why this is all so quiet. It is all very, very quiet. We're hearing nothing about the hospital where that plane, the plane stopped and he went to a hospital. We're hearing nothing about that. There's no reports. Where are those reports?
Yes.
Dr. Schulenberg, very quiet. You're right. He's no longer associated with this hospital, but the hospital hasn't come out and made any sort of statement about his departure. So everything is very quiet. What we do know is that there is a criminal investigation going on. So maybe that is the mandate of some of the authorities that are saying no one is to talk about this until we get some sort of resolution. And right now we know that the investigation is underway and it's very, very private. So you are correct about that. As an attorney, my antenna goes up to both the hospital and to anyone who touched Prince, you know, in the past couple of years.
Well, one of the things I want to make sure that I mention, because I have had so much experience with this and I feel so strongly about it, is that when Prince was on a plane going from Atlanta, where he had canceled a concert, postponed a concert, to going back home to Minnesota, and then they made this stop, this emergency stop in Illinois at a hospital, and, you know, of course they said he had the flu. That's what everyone supposedly has when they have drug overdoses.
Yeah.
But but he left this hospital against medical advice, AMA. Now, what is so tragic is that people tend to do this for various reasons. You know, certainly if, you know, the most common reason, if it's someone who's abusing drugs, even if it's because, like I think Prince was, not because he was a drug addict per se, but because he had all this pain and just didn't realize, you know, it wasn't working. The amounts he used to take just weren't working anymore. But when people leave a hospital AMA for whatever reason, that is such, nobody should do that. That is such a dangerous thing to do, because doctors, especially these days, when people are, when hospitals keep trying to kick you out sooner than you should leave, if they're saying that you should stay, you should stay.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that from a kind of a caregiver standpoint, but we are also dealing with someone is not a regular person, not like you and I walking through the streets who's just, you know, getting care. Prince is notoriously private. Prince has the funds to have access to the top doctors privately to fly to him, which we know ultimately did happen. We know that one of the people who found him was the son of a well-known California doctor who deals with opiate addiction. And so he may have been searching for so much privacy that he felt it was in his best interest, or his handler felt it was his best interest, to get back home and let's see who we can get to help you really quickly. Because they did get on it quickly, just unfortunately not quick enough.
Well, yeah, and that's actually, I mean, if I were Prince's family, if I had to point a finger and sue for wrongful death, I would point it to this California doctor. I mean, that is what I think is the most egregious. The doctor we were just talking about, obviously, I mean, you know, he should have taken, even the fact that he only saw him, he saw him weeks apart, you know, instead of being much more on top of his case, is not good medicine. But certainly to me, the one who is most to blame is Dr. Howard Kornfeld, who was called the day before and sent, couldn't cancel whatever he had the next day or that day, and sent his son, Andrew, who was a medical student, to go to Prince and to convince Prince to then come to California and enroll in the senior Dr. Kornfeld's program for drug addiction and pain. You know, poor Andrew. I mean, I feel sorry for him. His career may well be over before it began.
Yeah, definitely when you're the person that finds Prince, I can't see that helping the career move forward.
Well, especially when he was carrying buprenorphine, which it helps opioid addicts deal with withdrawal, but there's this big question. I don't know how much you've looked into this or know about Minnesota law, but apparently you're not really supposed to be carrying that across state lines.
Yeah, I would venture to guess, and I will, and I'm glad you put that qualifier in. I'm not Minnesota barred, but I would venture to guess that carrying something like this in any state when you are not a physician and nor is it prescribed to you is probably not something we all want to be engaged in. So that is definitely a question. There are a lot of little facts to this case just in the very immediate future leading up to his death that are just really interesting and would really raise eyebrows and need to be delved into.
Yes, absolutely.
So definitely.
Well, right now we need to delve into a break so we can come back with more delving into Prince. My guest is attorney Jill Cohn. We are talking today about Prince. Will his family sue for wrongful death? And if so, whom? So stay tuned. You're listening to Dr. Carol's Couch. I'm your psychiatrist host, Dr. Carol Lieberman, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to Dr. Carol's Couch. I'm your psychiatrist host, Dr. Carol Lieberman, with my guest, attorney Jill Cohn. She's a Washington, D.C. attorney. She's also admitted to the bar in Maryland and New York. We're talking about Prince. Can his family, will his family sue for wrongful death, and who will they sue? Now, during the break, Jill was saying that she, I chose Dr. Howard Kornfeld, the California doctor, as the one that I would aim at if I were his Prince's family. But Ms. Cohn was saying that she wouldn't pick him. She doesn't think that he's the most to blame. I guess what bothers me about him is that, I mean, supposedly there is a story that he contacted or his son contacted a local doctor in Minnesota, and the plan was that the son was supposed to bring this medication to a local doctor who would then see Prince on the day when they then found him dead. The son, Andrew Kornfeld, took a red eye, landed in Minnesota, only to find that Prince was already dead. And I don't know. I guess what bothers me is that, you know, doctors are supposed to, we don't know yet what the family or whoever it was that called Dr. Kornfeld, we don't know how much of an emergency he said it was, but if he couldn't come himself, and of course now he's kicking himself, I'm sure, for why didn't he get on the plane as soon as he got that call, but if he couldn't do it himself, then he should have called 911 as soon as he got the call instead of sending his son on the red eye.
I definitely appreciate what you're saying, Dr. Carol, and I see that. But as a lawyer, what I would wait to do is I wouldn't jump to anything at this point. I would keep every door open. I'd keep the Illinois hospital door open. I'd keep the local Minnesota doctors open. I'd keep any doctor he may or may not have seen in Atlanta. We don't know. Did he see anyone in Atlanta? We don't know that yet. Mm-hmm. Is anyone on that plane with him? We do not know. And I would keep the door open for Dr. Kornfeld, but he did not treat him. And so his actions what was his requirement? From California, call 911. Who was surrounding Prince? What kind of gag order, if you will, were given to people surrounding him? And you know, this is an intensely private person, and we are dealing with a celebrity. We are not dealing with a regular person who is just kind of living life and maybe gets surrounded by different types of people and is protected differently. I wouldn't close the door on anyone, and any good lawyer would just keep every door open, let this investigation go, and see what else is uncovered. You know, it is interesting that you pointed out April 21, where are we now, June 7th? That's a long time to still really not know what is going on.
Right.
There is a lot more to this story that we need to know before we can determine who, in fact, is responsible or who we think might be responsible for any aspect of this.
Yes, well, I agree. I mean, I don't mean to say that we should limit it to Dr. Kornfeld. I think there are several medical
players
who have a responsibility in this. But what happens is, yes, of course, Prince was a big celebrity, and that's one of the problems that celebrities have, which is that they get so-called special treatment by doctors who are flattered that this celebrity is coming to them, and they don't really get the kind of treatment they need.
Right. Or they think that they can. It's interesting, and you noted this. Kornfeld's son is a kid. He's not just his son, he's a kid. He's not a doctor. And I would be surprised and interested to know, who did Prince think he was getting? Did Prince think he was just getting this courier of medicine to bring to a local doctor? Who was orchestrating this? And
that's
who,
a very
in fact,
good
was
question.
That local doctor?
That's a very good question, because if Prince knew that this big addiction doctor was, you know, too busy to see him and was sending his medical student son, did that sort of push him over the edge? You know, did he feel rejected, disappointed, and so on?
Yeah, we wouldn't know. And who was making the contact? Did Dr. Kornfeld speak with Prince? Did he speak with the handler? Did he speak with a family member? Who did he speak with? Was there communication during the 6-hour or 5-hour flight from L.A. to Minnesota? What was going on then? How dire was the situation?
Right.
So I think, you know, it's going to come down to hours here. What was going on? And that's a long time to be up in the air if it was really emergency, which, you know, putting someone on a red eye with some drugs when you're not a doctor seems like you're treating it like an emergency.
Right. And also, you know, also, it seems like rather than calling 911 or calling another doctor in Minnesota to deal with Prince right away, it also seems like a way to make sure that Prince ultimately comes to you. Do you understand what I'm saying? That this is a way to get Prince to come to your California clinic rather than sharing him with somebody in Minnesota.
Right. And he is a renowned doctor. And you know, we have to give credit where credit is due. You know, opioid addiction is now almost epidemic in the United States. So there is a need for these kinds of facilities. And Dr. Kornfeld is known for treating this and for dealing with it. So Prince's handlers or whoever was reaching out to the right person. Mm-hmm. And I think as a doctor, as any professional, we appreciate the ability to control our own situation. I certainly wouldn't want another lawyer representing my client talking in one ear while I'm talking in the other. So I can respect Dr. Kornfeld's position of not, if in fact that is his position, of not wanting to have kind of a co-treatment plan. But certainly in the hours until he gets to the location, to the rehab facility, there had to be some sort of medical intervention. And what was that?
Right. I mean, there
and
should have been.
And his responsibility was it?
Yes, there should have been. That's right. You know, I mean, you know what's going to happen. They're all going to end up pointing fingers at each other in order to avoid any kind of either criminal or civil liability.
Mm. Yeah, it's not going to be, this is not an easy one. This is going to be complex. And you know, at the end of the day, it's just actually really sad. It's really sad. He didn't have to die.
And you know what else is sad? He had these, he had hip problems. He had problems from dancing all these years in high heels, jumping from things on stage, doing all kinds of, you know, dramatic dance movements and so on. And what's sad is that by being a Jehovah's Witness, he didn't want to have a blood, a blood surgery where there would be like a blood transfusion or anything like that.
Right.
And so, I mean, his problems, his pain.
Oh, like a spinning. His pain
could have been resolved or at least lessened with some medical procedures that he hadn't wanted to have. And instead, because of his religion, he, you know, started using more and more of these painkillers as a way to try to still go on without surgery.
And then there's a certain stigma to being addicted to something also.
Mm-hmm.
And he may have been hiding that from some people who knew him well.
Yeah.
We don't really know how. There are some reports, and you and I mentioned this earlier, that there are some reports that family members did say they knew he had this addiction. But it was kept very, very quiet. So I don't know if that's a Monday morning quarterback kind of response or if people really knew. Was there any type of intervention? Had people tried to help Prince before? Or was this kind of really coming out of left field just in the last 5 days?
Uh-huh. Well, certainly you would think from the time that he had to have this emergency stop. I mean, aren't there, I think there are some reports that may, I don't know how much they know or just are speculating, but that stop was for an overdose of pain medication.
Yes. Yeah, that is what the reports are saying. So that's definitely, but I wonder if was that the first time?
Mm-hmm.
Were there other times in the home? Did other private doctors visit him, either on tour or in his house in Minnesota? There are piles of medical records that need to be reviewed here to see exactly who touched this patient.
Yes, yes. And, of course, that adds to the problem. I mean, typically people who are taking pain pills and want to take more than a particular doctor is prescribing, of course, they typically go to more than one doctor in order to, and don't tell them about the other doctors.
Or go completely black market. We don't even know at this point what, in fact, was prescribed. We don't know if these drugs were illegally obtained,
mm-hmm.
whether there were false prescriptions, whether there was a real prescription at some point. We have no idea. But again, a person with celebrity status and the money has more access. And that's not to say that there is no one who is not of Prince's socioeconomic status that doesn't have an opioid addiction. We know they do, but it's kind of easier to hide. You know, not unlike Michael Jackson.
Yes, of course, yes, Michael Jackson went for years being addicted to various medications. And, of course, unfortunately, I mean, there was one doctor who was there, I mean, who got, on the night of his death, of Michael Jackson's death, it was clear that he was the one responsible at that time.
Yes.
Although, you know, do other doctors, what about all the doctors before that night who contributed to his pain pill addiction and other medication addiction? You know, why?
Yeah, there's definitely a parallel we see between Michael Jackson and Prince, you know, just even because of the industry they were in, the kind of eccentric, extremely talented kind of entertainer. So we want to see these parallels between the two, and certainly they are there. But Michael Jackson, let's not forget, this Dr. Conrad Murray was convicted of involuntary manslaughter. Mm-hmm. That is not an easy conviction to get. Beyond a reasonable doubt, it's not a civil case, not a wrongful death case. And the wrongful death case kind of was handled a totally different way, a much more complex case that the family, in fact, lost. But Conrad Murray, there was a clear connection between his treatment and actions as it related to Michael Jackson. Well, right now, you know, anything could happen in this situation with Prince. We have no hard and fast information at all, really nothing.
Yes. You know, that is interesting. It's true that his family didn't win the wrongful death suit, which seems so strange considering that Dr. Conrad Murray was convicted in the criminal case. You would think that would make it more of a slam dunk. Why? What do you think was the reason why they didn't win?
Well, you are very up on the law because you are correct. Generally, when you win a criminal case, the civil case is much easier to win because the burden of proof is much different. It's much lower in a civil case.
Right.
And, you know, we all know the term beyond a reasonable doubt. That is a very high standard of proof. That means you really, really, really got to be convinced in layman's terms. In civil cases, depending on where you are, there's different standards of proof, and it's not as high. And so one would think you get the criminal conviction, the civil conviction follows. But what the Jackson family did was they did not, in the case that's really publicized, it's not that they sued Conrad Murray for wrongful death and medical malpractice. What they did was a very complex piece of litigation, which is they sued the promoter of his tour.
Yes, that's right.
For hiring and for supervising Conrad Murray, for negligent hiring, negligent retention, negligent supervision, saying, you didn't pay attention to what was going on here. You were in charge of Dr. Murray. You told him what to do, and you ultimately are responsible. And the jury did not agree with that.
Yes. And, you know, that's interesting because, I mean, I guess they didn't sue Dr. Murray because he didn't have as deep pockets.
Exactly.
As the company. And it did seem like a bit of a stretch.
And he was lost his license, so those pockets weren't coming back anytime.
Yes. Well, we need to take another break. We're talking about Prince, his sad, untimely death, and who's to blame. My guest is Jill Cohn. She is a Washington, D.C. attorney, particularly specializing in personal injury and medical malpractice, and that's what this would be, a wrongful death case in terms of medical malpractice. So stay tuned for more. You're listening to Dr. Carol's Couch, and I'm your psychiatrist host, Dr. Carol Lieberman. And welcome back to Dr. Carol's Couch. I'm your psychiatrist host, Dr. Carol Lieberman, talking about Prince's death, willful or wrongful? And if it's wrongful, who to blame? My guest is attorney Jill Cohn. She is the co-founding partner of Cohn & Cohn, and specializing in personal injury and medical malpractice. So during the break, you were starting to tell me, this is an interesting, was a fun fact. I guess this isn't so much fun, but it's a...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not so funny what we're talking about, but it's a fun fact about Prince and Michael Jackson.
Yeah, you know, it's maybe a little sad foreshadowing of life, but several years ago, when the witness list was being presented and developed in Michael Jackson's family's case against AEG, the promoter, the civil case, not the criminal case, the Prince was actually one of the names on the witness list. He was going, allegedly, they were hoping to try to get him to testify on behalf of the estate based on the fact that he, Prince, allegedly had a bad relationship as well with AEG, the promoter.
Mm-hmm.
He
mm-hmm.
did not ultimately testify. But I just think, just given the parallels between these two men, their two deaths, and their lives, it's just something just very eerie and foreboding about that, and interesting, I think.
Yes, that is interesting. And he didn't testify because he didn't want to, or because there wasn't time, or
you know, we don't have information as to that. I think there were allegedly over 100 witnesses on that list, and I don't think any court would probably allow that. So maybe they have to be a little more choosy about who they would call. Prince and Michael Jackson never worked together. They didn't know each other. Maybe just, you know, at industry events saying hello, but they were not personal friends. They had not recorded anything together. So maybe in the end, the lawyer questioned how effective or persuasive Prince's testimony would have been ultimately, anyway.
But that, yes, that is interesting. What else? What was the other? There was something else that you wanted to say about...
Yeah, you know, I wanted to share a little bit about, and I think your listeners will really enjoy hearing this, because there is a lot of information out there about medical malpractice cases, how people get rich off of them, how the headlines really tout the really, really big ones. The reality is, in 33 out of our 50 states, there are caps on the amount of damages that can even be awarded in a malpractice case, and they vary wildly across the states, and I actually don't know, obviously, all 50. But what I do know is that Minnesota is not one of the states with a cap, which is one of the 17 states that doesn't have a cap, which means that if there is a wrongful death case based on medical malpractice in the civil arena, if the family does prevail, the damages could go as high as the jury wants to set them at. So whatever the jury returns will not be reduced to a cap of $250,000, as some states have, but is, you know, so to speak, the sky's the limit. And with the earning potential that Prince had,
yes,
his value to his family, what he did for them, and just his lost income, the grief, all of that, I can't even, at this point, hazard to guess what a jury would come back with and what Minnesota courts would uphold because they don't have a cap.
Yes, and you know, that's really, in California, it's $250,000. And it's really unfortunate. I mean, you know, of course, in some ways, I mean, doctors are happy that there's a cap because otherwise malpractice insurance would even be more outrageous than it already is. But on the other hand, as an expert witness, I come across people who have malpractice cases, and of course sometimes wrongful death cases, who aren't as famous or aren't as big earners as Prince, and they have a hard time finding attorneys to take their case, because by the time the attorney puts all the pays for all the experts and, you know, all the different things that you need to go to trial, unless they get those costs added on, which isn't a guarantee, they don't make as much money as they would like. And so sometimes cases are rejected and people who have real malpractice cases can't find an attorney to take it.
You are 100% correct, and I'd love another hour with you to talk about why I'm against caps. And it's because I'm a medical malpractice lawyer. It's exactly what you said. Imagine the working mother who has a misdiagnosis of breast cancer, dies, leaving three kids. No longer can work. The family has medical bills in excess of $250,000, and they cannot find a lawyer to take that case. Because why would a lawyer take that case? Lawyers, we aren't doing this just because we care about people. Do we care about people? Yes, most do. But we also have to get paid. And out of that, $250,000, the family's not getting anything, the lawyer's not getting anything, and we can't even hire expert witnesses to testify to a standard of care. So that is so insightful of you to kind of really hone in on the sad part of the cap, because what the world wants to hear is how litigious we are, how bad it is to look for money when a wrong has been done to you. But when you see the kinds of cases that you and I have seen, families decimated by negligent acts that could have been prevented, mothers lost, fathers lost, children lost, and then to get no money to pay bills, to send kids to college, to pay a mortgage, it is devastating. It is devastating. And so, lucky for the people of Minnesota, they do not have to face that, but very sad, as you mentioned, for the people of California. And it is low in California, you are right.
You know, another thing that medical kind of thing that's been coming up with Prince is all of a sudden there are all these people coming out of the woodwork who are claiming to be his children.
His heirs, yes. Yes, we were waiting for that. We know Prince was not married. We know Prince did not have a significant other. No one thought he had children. But yes, apparently now people are coming out of the woodworks claiming to be Prince's heirs. And that is because they want a piece of that estate. He died intestate. It's unfathomable to me that a man of his wealth would not leave a will. But
yes.
This is going to...
I had heard someone, an attorney, talking about that before, like right when he died, before his sister said that there was no will, and apparently no one has come up with a will to date, but this attorney was saying that, of course, you know, the prince was always, throughout his business practices, he was always very careful legally in terms of contracts and so on, and that he would definitely have a will. And then it turns out that nobody can find a will. What do you make of that? Do you think somebody, like the sister is hiding, or somebody is hiding it?
No, I don't think someone's hiding, but it is interesting to note that he was highly aware of legal relationships and contractual relationships. As you might recall, for a bunch of years, Prince had a symbol. It was a symbol, the artist formerly known as Prince, and that was because of a contractual dispute that he was having. And so he knew what was going on legally. He was not kind of one of these artists who laid back and let everyone do everything for him. So the fact that there is no will is very, very interesting. What was that choice about? Was he contemplating one? Had he drafted one? I do not believe the sister is hiding one. I do not believe that. It is highly odd, however, that a man of his wealth and his intelligence, quite frankly, would die with that one.
Yes,
live with that one.
And I think, I mean, he had to know that he was at risk. It's hard to believe that he would think, he was 57 when he died. And today, by the way, Minneapolis is calling today Prince Day. It would have been his 58th birthday today.
I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah. That's not old, but at the same time, he knew he wasn't in the best of health. He knew he was using all these painkillers, even if it was legitimate, like maybe he didn't think he was an addict, and maybe he wasn't an addict.
Right.
So he wasn't in perfect health. You would think someone who did think things out, as well as he seemed to, at least at times, that he would have had a will. He would have, I don't think he thought he was going to live forever, so why didn't he?
Right, very curious. And we all know we're not going to live forever. I think when you're in your 20s, maybe early 30s, if you don't have children, you can kind of still excuse not having a will. But I think at a certain point, we all realize death is sooner than not, and that we want to protect whomever we want to protect, whether that's a university, a municipality, maybe he wanted to start a school, maybe he would want to have protected this money he worked so hard for. Maybe he wanted to go to all of his siblings, maybe he wanted to go a certain way to certain siblings. But to have just left it with absolutely no rules, no even writing on a napkin, nothing, it is very curious given who he was. So yeah, I think this whole thing, the next few months, we are still going to be talking about this.
Well, I think maybe I have probably more of a cynical view. I do think somebody is hiding it. Maybe it's one of these doctors that we were talking about who doesn't want to come out like right away and say that he...
Oh, my goodness. I certainly hope that is not the twist this case takes.
I think that would be like a Hollywood movie or something.
Yeah, there's already enough going on here, so I'm hoping it's something else.
Well, we only have a few minutes left. What would you like? What else would you like to say? I mean, perhaps some advice for people who like to make a will, or people.
I would definitely like to say, anyone, make a will. Yes, I do. I'm not even in that business, but I would definitely encourage everyone to have a will, whether you have substantial finances, homes, whatnot. Don't forget all the value, the licensing, the trademark, his the intellectual property. It is almost unfathomable, the value. He was one of the most prolific artists. So this is just shocking to me. So yes, I would encourage everyone.
Okay,
to,
and what about for people, how they can decide whether it's a state with or without a cap, how they can decide or find an attorney if they think that they have a medical malpractice case?
Well, certainly, even if there is a cap in the state in which you live, I encourage you, if you think that wrong has been done to you, if you think there has been negligence, if you're not comfortable with something a doctor has done, go talk to a lawyer. The lawyer will be able to advise you. The lawyer will be able to speak with expert witnesses and give you that feedback. There are statute of limitations. There are times, a time deadline in which you can file a lawsuit. You know, I get countless calls from people. 10 years ago, XYZ happened to me. Well, I can't help them 10 years ago.
Yes, yes. I know that, and people aren't really conscious of that or aren't even aware of that. Well, I hear the
and
music again.
Any question, Doc? Many people are afraid to question a doctor, and we just believe what they say. And listen, I'm not saying be curious and second-guess everything a doctor does. But if something is telling you something is wrong, then you have to listen to that and go and speak to somebody.
Yes, absolutely. And just get somebody else's opinion. Most attorneys don't charge for this, for the first consultation, and just get an opinion. Well, Jill Combe, thank you so much for joining me on Dr. Carol's Couch. Very invaluable comments, interesting comments. And if you're in the states of the Washington, D.C., Maryland, or New York, you should call Jill, and especially if you have a, if you think that you have been harmed in some way by a doctor, or you just have this feeling that they may have done something wrong or negligent. I mean, these days, that is really an increasing problem, quite frankly. Doctors are rushing through things and not giving people as much detailed attention as they once did. So, Jill, thank you so much. And now we're going to take another break, and we will be back talking more about Prince. So stay tuned.